from Connect FM. This is Under Review, your weekly deep dive into the world of sports with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing.
After 285 games, the NFL season comes down to one final game. Who do we like to win? We'll discuss and we'll take a look at some of the wonky prop bets out there.
How did the Seahawks and Patriots rebuild so quickly? Are there any lessons the Steelers can learn from them? We'll have interviews with reporters from Seattle and Boston to get their perspectives on the game ahead.
The Penguins played one of their worst games of the season Monday. Are we concerned? We'll talk hockey along with a few other topics at the end of the show. I'm Dave Glass.
I'm Bob Anderson. Stay tuned as we discuss these topics and more as we go Under Review.
Sponsored by Fatula Eye Care, the Falls Creek Eagles, and Lebraska Plastic Surgery.
On Connect FM, your only local news radio. Welcome to Under Review for February 4th, 2026. Dee is away for work, so it's just the two of us tonight, Dave. And we are recording a day early here, but nonetheless, I've got to ask you this question. What does the Punxsutawney Phil groundhog and us sports talk guys have in common?
I don't know.
We're both wrong more than we're right. I see the prediction is six more weeks of winter, which to me would be like an early spring. So it's a win-win either way, really.
Yeah, well, that was, of all the prop bets this week, I think him seeing his shadow with this weather was one of the better ones. I have to confess, and look, kudos to my colleagues in Jefferson County. I think it's a great, you know, tourism promotion that they've got. You know, it puts Punxsy on the map. Everybody around the world's heard of Punxsutawney, PA. Good for them. I'm just not into the Punxsy Phil thing. I just am not.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's kind of a gimmick. But hey, whatever it takes, people can have their own traditions.
I wish Clearfield had something like that.
That's true. And I see he's only right about 35% of the time. So that's about in our neighborhood. It's Super Bowl week, and we're going to break down the big game. Before we do so, though, how would you rank this in terms of more exciting Super Bowls, less exciting in terms of matchups?
See, I think Steeler fans are a little biased because, look, I am conditioned to just not like the Patriots, even though everything about them has changed in the last 5 years. It's just, it's almost like with the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves are nothing like they were in 92, but I can never get that taste out of my mouth, you know? And so the Patriots being in it always knocks it down a peg for me. It's like, I just can't want to root for that team. And
so that was me with the Chiefs.
Well, I know, but for me, the Seattle's almost the opposite, because growing up, I was a huge Steve Largent, Dave Craig, Kurt Warner guy, you know, and they always were one of those teams that just couldn't quite get over the hump. They were good, but they were never good enough. And so it's exciting for me to see Seattle. And let's be honest, this is good for the NFL to have two new teams in there, I think. You know, neither one of these teams was expected to be anywhere near this good. Especially the Patriots. Nobody had the Patriots anywhere near this.
Well, so I'd like to know how many people had the Seahawks and the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Got to be very few.
Yeah, I did see there was a bettor who put, what was it? I saw 50,000 down, I think, on the Patriots to win the Super Bowl.
Preseason?
Yeah, it was before the season. I think it might have even been more, but they're saying that he can win $3 million if they win this weekend.
Man, I'd be hedging the heck out of that.
Well, he already won because he picked them also to get to the Super Bowl, so he's won like $1 million already.
Yeah.
But regardless, he can win another three.
Well, obviously I don't play in that space, but that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so this Super Bowl to me lacks the star power that we've seen in the past. I mean, there's no Travis Kelce, so no Taylor Swift. There's no Mahomes. There's no Tom Brady, no big-time quarterback like that. But I kind of like seeing two new teams in the Super Bowl. I was getting a little tired of the Eagles, a little tired of the Chiefs, obviously, so I don't mind it. It just makes for a, I don't know, I don't really care who wins or loses.
And that's, well, I definitely care. I'm definitely rooting for Seattle, but Yeah, I think, like I say, I think it is good. I do wonder if in a couple years, your comment about not having the star quarterbacks may be a little off, because I do think May is up and coming, very much so. And hey, you know, we've disrespected Darnold enough around here. He deserves respect. I think he's a good quarterback.
Has he erased all doubts for you?
Man, every quarterback has bad games. And the problem with his history is he has one bad game and everybody's like, oh, you know. At this point, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he is a big reason that they're even there.
Oh, no doubt.
Their defense let them down against the Rams. It took Sam Darnold having not just a good game, a great game for them to make it.
Well, that's a great point. And I mean, if you think about it, he comes into the league in one of the worst situations possible, playing for the New York Jets. And it's similar to Baker Mayfield's path, you know, and then he finds a new team, kind of gets a little bit of a resurgence, obviously, and now he's just taking off. So I don't think this is a fluke from Sam Darnold. Drake May has to play better if they want to have any chance in this game.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. They got so lucky with their path. I mean, I don't want to say, when you're 14-3, you're not lucky. So, but I do want to say, you know, taking on Houston, Houston's a great defense that has all kinds of problems on offense. And then Denver being without their quarterback. I mean, Drake May did not play well in that game.
No.
And their offense did not play well. And if Nix was in there, I truly believe Denver wins that game. So, and look, ifs and buts and all that stuff, I get it. They won the game. They deserve the credit. And they could easily win this game. I've seen crazier things happen. But I'll tell you right off the bat, and I'm kind of killing the you know, what
the
we're
going to
talk about later. But yeah. 4.5 is not enough points from what I've seen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that next. It's a 4.5-point spread. I take it you're taking Seattle. I am too. I really agree with you. I don't think that's a big enough spread either.
Right after those two games, I was like in my head, like, what would be the number that would make me hesitate? And for me, it was 7-8.
Yeah, a touchdown.
And when I saw it was 4.5, I'm like, oh man, I'm taking Seattle all day. Now, number one, we're wrong more than we're right this year with the spread, so you probably shouldn't listen to us. Number two, as we keep saying, and I know it seems like a cop-out, but it's true, turnovers change everything. Team has 3 or 4 turnovers. I don't care what the spread is. In the NFL, no team is good enough to overcome that consistently, so who takes care of the ball better? I hate to say it, my money's on Sam Darnold. He had to take care of the ball in the playoffs, and he's done it. And the pressure's on Drake May. They need to find 25 to 30 points. They're not going to win this game 14 to 10. I don't believe that. So
yeah, I think Seattle's definitely the better team. They had the harder schedule. They played in a tougher division. New England was fortunate. They had an easy schedule. They would have probably lost, like you said, if Bo Nix were healthy. But they have won 16 of 17, and there's something to be said for that.
Well, and they have the third best point differential in the league. I mean,
yeah, Seattle's number one.
The Rams are number two, and New England. And here's the other thing that really shocked me. New England has actually outscored Seattle. Now, Seattle's given up less points, but New England's offense was better in the regular season. I would have never guessed that.
No, and if you look at their weapons, like, nobody scares me on that team. And back to Seattle, they're the only team that finished top three in offense and top three in defense this year. So we'll see. The underdogs have won the last three Super Bowls outright and have covered the spread in 5 straight. So that's something to be said, too.
Yeah.
All right. You want to get to some prop bets here?
Oh, go for it.
All right. I think I ask you these about every year, but you know what? It's fun. So I'm actually doing a little prop bet contest, and I want to get your opinion, so maybe you can help me out with these. National anthem, over or under 120.5 seconds.
Who's
so 2 minutes. Charlie Puth, who I have no idea who that is.
We're
old guys. We don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is. When I don't know who it is, I'll take the over on general principle, because they generally want to, you know, show off in the Super Bowl, but it should be under that. That's my hot take, is no national anthem should run that long, but I'll bet it goes over.
Yeah. Well, last year, John Baptiste sang it in 1:19, just under.
Just under.
And just 2 of the last 8 anthems have gone over 2 minutes. The longest was Alicia Keys with a runtime of 2:36 2013.
They need to get Jimerson in there. You want to get, let's get this show on the road.
I like it. All right. Heads or tails?
I always take tails.
Yep. It has a slight edge historically, 31-28.
Yeah, whatever.
Which means it should be heads, law of averages.
Yeah.
Opening kickoff for a touchback, yes or no?
No, I don't think it will.
All right, well, that's what the numbers would suggest. The return rate jumped this year from 33% in 2024 to 74%.
Well, it's because the NFL, you know, we get on them for this and that and the other thing. They are so good at making adjustments on the fly. They did this wacky new kickoff thing last year. There were too many touchbacks. They're like, okay, fine, you can hit your touchback. Now the ball's going to come out to the 35. And now teams are like, well, gee whiz, I can cover better than that. So they put it into the zone. Yeah. And it's amazing, by the way, how good these kickers are.
Oh, it
they
is.
Can put it to the 2 yard line almost every single time.
And that changing that to the 35 was the game changer.
Yeah. So you know what? And I mean this. I'm not being sarcastic. Kudos to the NFL for tweaking this until they found a kickoff formula that actually is interesting.
And you don't see too many injuries on the kickoffs
because
anymore
because now they're close together. The whole point was they're not running from 50 yards apart and slamming into each other. So it's better.
Yep. First penalty will be for holding, false start, or anything else.
I'm going to go with first of all, anytime you give me the field, I'll take the field. They have called so little holding in the playoffs that I would actually put that as very low. But I'm going to take the field.
Okay, well, that's probably a smart move. Although offensive holding is the most frequently called penalty in the NFL, about 20% of
all penalties. Yes, but not in the playoffs, I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah. The Gatorade bath color, what do you got?
Oh, my goodness.
Just give me a color.
Oh, well, I like orange, so I'm going to go with orange. I'll bet it's not orange.
It's actually the favorite. Orange is the favorite. Yeah, it's used more than any other color of this century, five times. But I will say the Seahawks won it in 2014, and they had orange in the jug then, so we'll see.
I can't believe people bet. Do not bet on this stuff, people. Please don't bet on this stuff.
This is the fun stuff, though, you know? Will there be a successful two-point conversion?
I'm going to go with yes. Only because I'm sure the odds are pretty good on that, but teams now are so much more aggressive. Team gets behind, they're going to be more apt to do it. Somebody takes an offsides penalty, they're going to be more apt to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I think the Patriots do it in the second half. I think they're going to be playing catch-up. How many times will teams go for it on fourth down, over or under 2.5?
Oh, I'd take over. And the 2025 NFL, I would go over that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and I need your final score prediction and your MVP.
Oh, boy, the final score. I really like Seattle to be able to put – I'm going to say 28-21.
Okay, all right, and your MVP?
I'm going to go with Darnold. I just think he's been really good lately, and they're going to try to force him to beat them, I think, and I think he's going to do it. I mean, and Jigba's that good, so.
Yeah, I'm taking Seahawks 30, Patriots 20. And I'm taking Darnold, too. Quarterbacks have won 34 out of 59 MVP awards and 5 of the last 6. And do you know who the exception was? In the last 6 years, only one player was not a quarterback.
Oh,
want a hint?
Go ahead.
I'll give you the game. Seahawks, Rams.
Seahawks, Rams.
Yeah.
Seahawks, Rams?
Oh, not Rams, Bengals. Sorry. Rams, Bengals.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Cooper Kupp.
Yeah,
he had a great game. That was a great season there. Hey, maybe Cooper Kupp will win it again.
Boy, wouldn't that be a story?
Yeah. All right, it's time to get to a break. When we return, we'll look ahead and talk to some reporters from both teams. You're listening to Under Review on Connect FM.
Back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by the Falls Creek Eagles. The Patriots are playing for an NFL record 7th Super Bowl title Sunday. Here to talk about it with us is Jordy McElroy, the managing editor at Patriots Wire. Jordy, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I can't believe they're playing for a Super Bowl. It's pretty crazy.
I know. Nobody saw this coming this quickly, and that's where I wanted to start. You wrote an article entitled 9 Key Moves That Helped the Patriots Get to the Super Bowl. Which of those do you think was the biggest key to their success?
Yeah, to me, it was obviously going out and hiring Mike Vrabel. I mean, you get him coming in into New England, and, you know, he made a lot of coaching changes there that needed to be made. And, you know, the players are buying in. He's just, he sort of feels like a Bill Belichick type of style coach, except, you know, he has that fun aspect that Bill didn't have. So he's a guy the players love to play for, and they've obviously flocked to, and you can see the proof is in the pudding. It's working.
Well, of course, the team wouldn't be where they are if they didn't draft Drake May. He had a tremendous regular season, but he struggled a bit in the playoffs. How much of a concern is his play in Patriots land up there as of late?
Yeah, so obviously you want to see him play better in the playoffs. And, you know, the biggest concern, obviously, are the turnovers. He did a better job of that in the AFC Championship game against the Denver Broncos. But, you know, he had those rash of turnovers against the Los Angeles Chargers in the wild card round. And then he turned the ball over several times against the Houston Texans as well in the divisional round. But you also have to factor in, you know, the weather wasn't great in some of those games. So, you know, it's been kind of tough circumstances for him. And then you couple that with the fact that he's facing three consecutive top five NFL defenses, which no quarterback's ever gone through three straight in the playoffs like that. The level of difficulty was ridiculous, but you're hoping him going in here in Santa Clara and obviously better weather there, you're hoping to see the best of Drake May yet.
Any concerns about that shoulder injury?
Not really. So, you know, he's the quarterback of the New England Patriots heading into the Super Bowl. So I understand a lot of people being concerned about it and everything. But Phil Perry from NBC Sports Boston, he reported that he had that injury going into the AFC Championship game, and you know might have exacerbated it a little bit. But Sunday, Drake May just said that on Sunday he said he felt he turned a corner with that injury, and he looks like he's good and ready to go.
Well, that's good news for you guys for sure. I have to ask: the team spent a second round pick on Travion Henderson, and why is it that he isn't seeing the field much? I mean, Stevenson gets the bulk of the work.
Yeah, so you know, Travion, he had a lot of explosive plays kind of earlier in the year, and he kind of took off. And you know, people forget, you know, Travion Henderson, he's still a rookie, and he's still growing, and he's improving. And man, Ramondre Stevenson is a really, really good running back, and I don't think he gets a lot of respect for that. Obviously, early in the year, he had the fumble issues, and you know, that kind of soured the team on him a little bit to the point where Travion was getting a little bit more carries. But Rabel stuck with Stevenson, and You can look at the work later in the season has obviously paid off with Stevenson being one of the Patriots' most productive offensive players.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of bitterness on my part because I drafted him in fantasy football thinking, oh man, this guy's going to be a stud, but I still like his long-term prognosis. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what is the mood up there right now. I think around here, most people expect the Seahawks to win this game. I know they're favored by 4.5. Does it feel like you guys are big underdogs, and do you think that's motivating the team at all?
Yeah, so I think pretty much across the board, most people are going to favor the Seahawks heading into this game. That defense is really good, and their offense is really well balanced. And as long as Sam Darnold keeps playing the way that he's playing, obviously, I can understand why some people would like their chances. But you know, in New England world, there is this us against the world type of mentality. You know, you see wide receiver Matt Collins comes out with the bottles and everything clanging them, and they're running with this whole Warriors theme, this based around the movie The Warriors. So it's, and Mike Vrabel, he had on a shirt today at practice that had Warriors written on it. So the Patriots, they're embracing this underdog role throughout these playoffs, and you know, they've been doubted multiple times. They were doubted against the Chargers, even though the Chargers were undermanned. They were doubted against the Houston Texans. They were doubted against the Denver Broncos, even with a backup quarterback in New England. They're still standing.
Yeah, it feels like they're kind of playing with house money here. To me, they're probably a year or so ahead of schedule. Did you guys have any sort of expectations of this type of run early in the season?
So Bob, actually, I agree with you. Like I think they're way early here. I'm thinking a year or two ahead of schedule. I came in thinking that this team would maybe win 8 games, and you know they started winning a few games, and you see fans posting, oh, Super Bowl's back on, and I'm laughing the whole time. And now looking back, it's like, man, it's not that funny. Like, this is serious. They're here, and it's a testament to how great of a job Mike Vrabel has been, and obviously Josh McDaniels coming in and getting the most out of Drake May.
Oh, for sure. We're talking to Jordy McElroy, the managing editor at Patriots Wire. Patriots were big spenders in free agency in 2025. I think they gave out, what, over $200 million guaranteed money. But the investments are paying off. Who has been the biggest contributor from that free agency group?
It's definitely been Milton Williams, the defensive tackle up front. And, you know, he's the guy that made a lot of big plays last year to kind of wreck the Kansas City Chiefs. Their three-peat run there with the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, he's come in, and him being paired with Christian Barmore up front, those two are arguably the best defensive tackle tandem in the entire NFL. And, you know, them going up against Seattle Seahawks interior front that I'm not too highly sold on, I think could be an interesting contest.
Well, what are you expecting? More of a defensive struggle in this game?
So I'm honestly expecting the Patriots defense to do really well in this game, and I don't think they've gotten a lot of credit throughout these playoffs. I mean, that's a top five defensive team, and I think they can impact, obviously, along the defensive front. They've shown the ability to stop the run, and where things get really interesting with Sam Darnold and the Seahawks didn't face last week, I think the Patriots have one of the best secondaries in football. So it'd be interesting seeing how Jackson Smith and Jigba matches up with Christian Gonzalez, and also how Carlton Davis III and obviously Marcus Jones factors in there as well.
Yeah, you mentioned it there. JSN, I think, is going to be one of the keys to the game. Can Gonzalez shut him down? Because nobody's really been able to shut him down this year, Jordy.
Yeah, he's been incredible. He's arguably been one of the best receiver in football this year, at least. I expect Gonzalez to come in there, and look, JSN's so talented, he's going to get his to some degree, but I think Gonzalez can make things a little tough for him, and the Patriots, they might scheme up some things where Gonzalez has some help over the top, and they might double up. They're very confident in their ability to stop the run, so I think they can just present a little bit more challenges than the Los Angeles Rams, a defense that was falling off significantly late in the season.
Well, offensively, they're going to probably have to put up at least, I'm thinking, 17 to 20 points, even if the defense plays well. Who needs to, or what kind of things need to happen for the Patriots offense to turn it around?
Yeah, they obviously can't put up 10 points to come away with a win in this
tough
game.
So, yeah.
So offensively, I'm looking – we were talking about it earlier, Ramondre Stevenson. I'm looking for the run game to get going. Maybe Travion Henderson has a breakout performance in this game, but I'm looking for the run game to get going a little bit for New England in this one. And, you know, you get the run game going – It kind of keeps the pass rush on its heels, and you know Drake May can get in some play action plays and hopefully exploit the Seattle Seahawks' defense a little bit in the game. But I'm not so, and also I think another interesting matchup is the outside corners there in Seattle. Like, you know, they've got some talent there, but I think they're a unit that can get exposed over the top a little bit. And one of Drake's best skills is obviously throwing the ball downfield. And, you know, he's not facing Patrick Surtain this week. He's not facing, you know, Derek Stingley Jr. He's going up against a good Seattle Seahawks defense, a really top unit, but I think their corners can get exploited over the top a little bit. So I'm interested in seeing a battle with Kayshon Booty, you know, going deep, maybe Matt Collins as well in this matchup.
Well, I've got to ask you about Bill Belichick. He was snubbed from the Hall of Fame. How is that news received up in your parts, and do you think the process needs revamped?
Yeah, I think it's honestly ridiculous that Bill Belichick, an 8-time Super Bowl winner, a 6-time Super Bowl head coach, wouldn't be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Tom Brady said it best, you know, if Bill Belichick isn't a first ballot Hall of Famer, then who is? Like no one should ever be. Again, it's crazy. It seems like there's some personal vendetta stuff going on in there. I know they're trying to make it seem like it's the voting process and all that stuff, but it just seems like it's just something personal is going on in there. I don't know how you could possibly leave somebody with, you know, Bill Belichick's resume out of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, 31 playoff wins, most of any NFL coach in history. Well, I got to leave you with this. We can't let you go without your prediction, Jordy. Who wins, and give us a score?
Yeah, I'm going with the Patriots, and obviously they're thinking, oh, the Patriots guys picking the Patriots. But
well, you got to.
I like the matchup here for New England. I love. The interior battle that I said earlier with, you know, Milton Williams and Christian Barmore up front, I'm not too sold on the Seahawks' ability to protect Sam Darnold there in the middle. And I think if those two guys, if they can get some heat on Sam Darnold, he might start seeing ghosts again. I'm sorry, he's played great so far, but I can see that happen. The Patriots have been very opportunistic on the defensive side of the ball. I can see them getting some turnovers, and I expect to see a much more improved performance from Drake May in some nice weather. So I'm going Patriots 27-24.
All right, I like it. Tell our listeners how they can find your work.
Yeah, you guys can find us on Patriots Wire. We'll be doing a lot leading up this week. We have a writer on the ground, Sophie Weller. She's getting a lot of cool stuff, a lot of one-on-one interviews. She has one up with Elliot Wolf right now that you could find on the site. So definitely come by and check us out.
Okay, that's awesome. Thanks again for coming on, and have a good weekend, and hope things go well for you.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
All right, keep it right here as we continue Under Review, sponsored by the Falls Creek Eagles.
You're listening to Under Review Sports Talk. More takes, more talk. More sports. Let's go back to the guys.
Yeah, we're just doing the interview.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Fatula Eye Care. Reach out to Dr. Dan and his team for all your eye care needs. The Seahawks will play in the Super Bowl for the fourth time in franchise history on Sunday. Here to talk about it is Andrew Destin, formerly of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, now with the AP as a Washington sports reporter. Andrew, how's life out in the West?
It's going well, Bob. Thanks for having me on, guys. Obviously, miss talking to you guys and miss Pennsylvania. And I know we can talk about the Post-Gazette and kind of unfortunate what's happened there. But,
yes.
Yeah, it's great to be covering this team. Good to be out on the West Coast again, close to my folks, and covering a Super Bowl. I mean, geez, what more could I ask for in my first year on the beat?
It's funny how it all comes full circle, and here we are less than a year later talking to you again about an entirely different topic. But I've got to start with Sam Darnold. I have to admit, I doubted his ability to come through in big games especially, but he's proven me wrong, Andrew.
Yeah, he's proven a lot of people wrong. I would say, I don't mean to be that guy, but I don't think he proved me wrong. And I only say that because I was a huge fan of Darnold's coming out of college. I remember a game I actually went to with my folks before I went to Penn State for college. I went to the Rose Bowl in 2017, Penn State USC, and Darnold was just absolutely impressive in that game. And I always kind of knew that he had that it factor to him. The issue was just he never really put it together at the NFL level, so you kind of wondered, okay, is this guy going to be labeled a bust? Is he somebody who has a better college career than he does an NFL career? And so I think with Darnold, it was just that he had to get himself into the right system. No disrespect to the New York Jets, but that wasn't the right spot for him to be. Carolina Panthers certainly wasn't. But going to the San Francisco 49ers for a year, being a backup to Brock Purdy, then going to the Minnesota Vikings and being a starter there for a year, getting the 14-win season, he has steadily improved every year he's been in the NFL, and especially so the last 3 years. So all he's done this season is continue the progression he had that started with the Niners, and really it's been impressive to watch him have a command of an offense and maybe not be the best quarterback in the league, but sure as hell in the top five, or sure as hell in the top 10 at least. So.
You got me now? Okay. You bring up a great point that about Darnold and being in the right system, and it makes me wonder how many highly touted quarterbacks over the years just never landed in the right place. I mean, I think about Baker Mayfield and how it didn't work out with Cleveland, and now, you know, he's become a star in Tampa Bay for the most part. And, you know, do you think this is a more recent phenomenon, or do you think this goes back decades with just, you know, right quarterback, wrong situation?
I think it goes back decades, but I think maybe more so a little bit more recently. Again, it's more speculation by me, I think, because this is my first year full-time covering the NFL. But I think back to so many guys that have come out of college where it's like, you know, maybe they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, even in college. Like, we can go to Tom Brady, right? Such an excellent NFL quarterback, one of the greatest of all time. And Michigan, in hindsight, was probably not the right spot for him to be in college because he's competing with guys who are more highly regarded, competitive Big Ten school. And then you flash forward to the present where it's like a guy like Josh Allen took the route of going to Wyoming. Then he goes to the NFL and lands in the absolute perfect landing spot. I'd have to believe that if Josh Allen was in a run-first offense, it probably wouldn't bode as well for him, where he gets 40, 45 attempts a game and gets to sling it for 400 yards. And if he throws an interception or two, it's not a big deal. That's a long way of me saying, I think this has been going on since the beginning of NFL football. but it's probably a little bit more obvious now because the disparity between the good and the bad teams, it feels like it's only grown in terms of the competent franchises versus the incompetent franchises. I just feel like we've gotten to a place where there's 10 to 12 teams every year that can legitimately compete for a Super Bowl, and there's 20 of them that have absolutely no shot. And in a league that prides itself on parity, I feel like this is the first year where the parity really went by the wayside, and it kind of became, okay, going into the playoffs, we kind of knew which teams were going to go all the way, and if not, there were three or four of them. So that's a long way of answering your question and saying that if you get into a good team, a good franchise, it can do wonders for you as a quarterback.
Well, and it's a great segue because you bring up the fact that the parity did really go by the wayside, and when I look at the standings at the end of the year, and frankly, the two teams with the best point differential, two of the top three, because the Rams were actually second, but they ended up in the Super Bowl. And as a Steeler fan, we saw the Seahawks and the Patriots. And even though the Steelers beat the Patriots, I actually thought the Patriots were far and away the better team. It was just a turnover thing that day. So those were clearly two of the better teams. Did you see this kind of dominance coming for this Seahawk team this fast? Because I know we didn't here.
No, I definitely didn't. My first year on the beat, I did not expect this from them at all. Frankly, what I expected from this team was to be a group that is competitive, competes, certainly is one that's among the best in the NFL in terms of having a very good defense, but not necessarily one that's like, oh yeah, it's going to take over the league and, you know, really grab it by the horns. I'm not expecting that at all. I was expecting them to compete for a wild card, maybe be a team that could compete for the division. I say this with all due respect to the Seahawks. I still think the Los Angeles Rams are a better team. I just think the Rams got unlucky in that they had to play the Seahawks in Seattle and that they were a little bit banged up by the end of the year. But what the Seahawks had working for them is they took care of business. It's super cliche, but they won the games they were supposed to, and the ones that they weren't necessarily supposed to, they stole half of those. They stayed healthy. They played mostly mistake-free football, aside from a couple troublesome games for Sam Darnold, and the defense showed up night in and night out. That's as much as you can ask for. So are they the most sexy team in the NFL? No, and I think they would take pride in that and say, we don't care about that. What they are is a machine. And I feel like every decade, every couple of decades, we have one or two teams a decade like that. This feels very much like this decade's version of a team that might not be remembered in 20 years, but you know, Chicago Bears of the 80s, they were a one-hit wonder, but man, they kind of beat the crap out of people. That's kind of how the Seahawks feel. They just kind of took care of business, and all of a sudden you looked up and went, oh, shoot, they're 14-3. How did that happen?
We're talking to Andrew Destin. You can follow him on Twitter, @AndrewDestin1. So to me, the Seahawks should give Steelers fans a little bit of hope, Andrew. They were able to turn the team around without necessarily tanking. How was John Schneider and the rest of the brass able to do that so quickly and effectively?
Three words: Russell Wilson trade. I wrote a story about this, I think, a few days ago for the Associated Press. It feels like every day is rolling over into one these days. But, the trade of Russell Wilson allowed the Seahawks to get Charles Cross, to get Devin Witherspoon, to get Boye Mafe, to get Derek Hall. Those are four impactful players on your line, on your team. Devin Witherspoon's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Boye Mafe, Derek Hall, that's a dynamic pass-rushing duo. Charles Cross, they just gave him close to or right around $100 million to be the left tackle of the franchise for the next 5, 6, 7 years. Those are no small accomplishments. You supplement that with great drafting, where the last three NFL drafts, 2023, they got Devin Witherspoon and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who just happens to be NFL leading receiver in catches. And then in 2024 and 2025, and a couple other fantastic selections, Gray Zabel this past year, left guard for them, who seems like a home run of a selection. All shrewd moves in free agency, DeMarcus Lawrence, Cooper Kupp. Yeah, fantastic work. That's going to take your team to the next level. If you can really kind of knock it out of the park in all three phases of free agency, draft, and trade, they really did a fantastic job there. And it's unsurprising that I believe I have this stat right. They're the third youngest team in the NFL. because of that, what are we seeing? Oh, yeah, the third youngest team in the NFL is built for years to come, starting with this season. They're going to be a force to reckon with for a few years, and that's all credit in the world to John Schneider for knocking it out of the park in all phases of his job as GM, which president of football operations as well. Once he got that title elevated after Pete Carroll was fired, it feels like things have only gone more and more uphill for him.
What's amazing to me, I agree with everything you said. What's amazing to me is that Denver clearly lost that Russell Wilson trade and yet was able to shrug it off so quickly. I mean, you would think that that would have crushed them for 4 or 5 years, and yet they also went 14-3. And my son's a huge Broncos fan, so I've kind of been watching them. It is rather amazing. But I want to stick with this matchup. I think it's interesting to me because, in my opinion, the NFC West was much tougher than the AFC East, but the AFC overall was tougher than the NFC this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the NFC was tougher in the sense of having more top-heavy teams. What the AFC had was a lot more depth, so everyone was kind of beating one another up. I don't know if the Patriots were necessarily the best team in the AFC. I think what they are is the team that survived the gauntlet. You know, I thought really highly of the Bills. I think the Broncos, if Bo Nix is healthy, that's a much different game than the AFC Championship game. You got a lot at play there, right? So, I kind of look at it as, these teams, they did a banner job, right? They are what they are. They got to this point because they survived the gauntlets with the Patriots, what they had to persevere with in the AFC. Very different task. I mean, the Texans were a very good defense, but, you know, they made life difficult for the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, but all of those teams, AFC, had their flaws, and the Patriots found a way to kind of maneuver around all of them.
All right, well, I got to get your prediction before we get you out of here, Andrew. Who wins, and what's the final score?
Oh, I love the question, Bob. Give me the Seahawks 24, Patriots 17. I think that 4.5-point spread is a really good number. I think the Patriots just come short of covering it. Seahawks are going to get their second Super Bowl in franchise history and do so rather convincingly. Maybe a late touchdown by the Patriots makes it a little bit closer, but in a rematch of Super Bowl 49, I'm expecting the Seahawks to rise to the occasion and really knock it out of the park.
And don't throw at the goal line.
Yeah, that would be wise. But, you know, they also don't have Marshawn Lynch. No disrespect to Kenneth Walker III, but that's a little bit different. But
right.
Ken's been very good the last few weeks, so maybe they'll pound the rock with him, especially with no Zach Charbonnet. So, yeah, the onus really does fall on kind of Walker III.
All right. Well, hey, thanks so much, Andrew. Always a pleasure catching up with you, and keep up the good work out there.
Yeah, great chatting with you guys. Miss you guys back east a lot. Stay safe with all that snow and ice that I keep seeing on the East Coast, and enjoy, guys. Have a good Super Bowl Sunday.
Thanks, you too. Under Review is sponsored by Fatul Eye Care. When we return, we'll talk to a guest who covers the Patriots. Stay with us.
Let's get back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Lebraska Plastic Surgery, where they help you look and feel your best. Now, this show, we talked a lot about football, but let's finish it with some other topics, especially hockey. You know how much we love to talk hockey, Dave.
We love to talk hockey.
We love it. The Penguins had won 6 in a row coming into Monday and completely laid an egg. We're recording prior to Tuesday's game, but was that the worst game of the season for them?
I can't say. It was down there. They had a couple others. I mean, look, I was at the 2 games where they blew those huge leads in the third. It's hard for me to put this in the same category with that. But I will say, number one, how far have they come that losing a 3-2 game on a controversial goal in the third, and we're like, oh my goodness, what's wrong with this team after a 6-game winning streak? So, you know, first of all, kudos to them for raising the bar really, really high compared to where we were. In October, we'd be like, all right, that's about what we expected. Carlson looked bad and Malkin turned the puck over, so whatever. But they're playing much better. I do think if you look at the third period of that Rangers game, they started to get sloppy. We've seen this before.
You brought it up last week.
At the end of winning streaks, I've seen it so many times with Malkin and Crosby and this team. They just get a little too big for their britches and start thinking that they can just coast on talent, and they're not near. They used to be able to do that. They can't do that anymore. And I loved how Dan Mews afterwards kind of publicly tore into them about it. Not like ripping them, but like, look, this is so far from the standard that we set. And I think as much as I like Mike Sullivan, and he's always going to be royalty around here, he deferred, especially towards the end, way too much to the veterans. And I think that's part of why Carlson was never really a good player for him. He was not held to to account. And Muse, one game, and Muse is like, no, enough of this. We can't have this. This is the wrong way to play it. You've got to, you know, more attention to detail. So one game, I'm not worried about one game. I'm very interested. And again, you folks will know by the time you hear this, this game tonight on the island is a big game,
yeah,
folks.
Number three in the Metro.
You know, we're coming off, it used to be, I was like, oh, back-to-back games, we're old. We've been good in back-to-back situations. So if they play smart, take care of the puck, even if they lose, if they do it, and I do sound like someone doing it the right way, I can live with it. The way they lost last night was irritating because they just played dumb.
Yeah, and the Islanders played last night too, so neither can use that as an excuse.
That's really good.
I got to say, I think the Pens were lucky to be in that game late in that game.
100%.
I mean, they got outshot. I don't know. Would they have like two shots in the second period?
Shelov saved
them. Shelov's played great.
He was fantastic. Yeah. The last goal, you know, look, They earned the loss, and I'm not going to say anything else, but it really bothered me that they called it, and the penalty was good, that Carlson deserved the penalty, but then the guy fell into Shelov's and basically forced him into the goal. I'm like, you can't do that. I don't care how you get there. You can't force the goalie in.
Yeah, so you would have...
Give him a penalty shot. I could live with that.
You think that should
have been overturned then? Yeah, I absolutely think... Penalty, yes. If they would have given him a penalty shot, I'm like, you know what? Carlson was behind him and he was clearly ahead. Fine, if they score on the penalty shot, I've got no issue with it.
So they justified that saying the defenseman tripped him in, right?
You still can't not... Look, if there was a little bit of contact, but... Shelov's kind of blocked it, and then his whole body went into it with the puck.
Yeah, I don't know what he's supposed to do there.
There's nothing he can do. Yeah. And Muse said, look, I'd challenge that 100, you know, again, no problem. And this is one of my biggest problems with the NHL, and we'll get into another one in a minute, is that goalie interference is so not black and white. Nobody knows what they're going to overturn.
It's catch
ridiculous.
In the NFL.
Well, it's worse than that. Yeah. I think it's worse. I'm pretty good with the catch in the NFL thing, and you guys don't always agree, but at least I have an idea what they're looking at. I have no idea what they're looking at in the NFL, in the NHL. It's like the same exact play in one game and then the next, and it's like one's good and what's not. By the way, that's a good segue into my other thing that irritates me. It's hard to say what's going to be a suspension and not in the NHL.
Yep.
Russ gets 3 games. I think he deserved 1. 3 was over the top for somebody who's never had a suspension. Did you see the hit that Tom Wilson put on that guy?
I did.
How does he not get suspended for that?
He didn't even get a hearing.
I'm like, he completely wrecked that guy.
Yep.
And it hit him in the head. I mean, that was vicious. It was blindside. It was horrible.
Yeah, a guy with 6 previous suspensions and 3 fines and a history of this sort of thing doesn't even get a hearing.
I was so mad. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Well, and I was even okay with Russ getting a 3-game suspension. If you're going to set that standard, by golly, then stick to it. And
Dan Wilson better get something.
Yeah, you would take that hit out of the game if you're that, you know, strict about it all the time. But there's just no consistency. And
even the Canucks didn't think that Rust would get 3. They thought he deserved 1 or 2.
I blame George Parros for that. I mean, he's a goon too. Any concerns about Sid? He just hasn't looked himself lately.
Look, he's 38. I mean, he goes through this. He's not what he... It's time to acknowledge he's not what he was. He's probably still going to get 85 points. But the other thing I have to say is Sid is very sensitive, I think, to who his line mates are. And they got to get Brazo off that line. He does not fit. Brazo is not a fast skater. Sid likes fast skaters. Right now, frankly, I would probably put Kindle up with him just and let Kindle play center, and then Sid doesn't have to worry as much about defense, and he's got the wheels.
Put Kindle on the wing too.
Well, whatever, but yeah. And look, I'm not trying to knock Brazo. Brazo has been a revelation, but there's players that fit with Sid and there's players that don't fit with Sid, and this isn't working.
You got to have the foot speed. Yeah, he's only had 1 assist in the last 4 games, and he's a -4 during that time too, and it does coincide with Russ, so you bring up a good point. Mike Sullivan was hired by the Rangers on a 5-year deal.
What a mess.
And now they're in a rebuild. He could have stayed here if he wanted to rebuild. Is Mike Sullivan overrated?
Well, Look, I'm not going to say that. The guy was great. I mean, we don't win those cups without him, so it's hard. I'm not going to sit here and bust on Mike Sullivan. I'm going to bust on Chris Drury, who thought his Rangers were a heck of a lot closer to being good than they actually are. That roster is bad. It's about to get a lot worse. If I'm Sullivan, it's like the mistake. It was just like with Tomlin. I think it was time for Sullivan to move on. Yep. I mean, it just was stale, okay? Mm-hmm. No hard feelings, but to go to the Rangers, it's like, buddy, I didn't think that was the right move then, and I sure don't think it is now. But he, of course, you know, he's making plenty of money, so he's laughing all the way to the bank. But,
well, where do you think Artemi Panarin ends up?
Boy, that's a good question, Bob. I've been thinking a lot about that, and it's where does Artemi Panarin want to end up? Because he has all the cards here. They've taken him off the ice.
And he says he doesn't want to move twice.
Right. So, and I know they're allowing him to try to negotiate extensions, but that means... You know, I think the Rangers really screwed this up because they advertised what they're doing, you know, wrote the letter to the fans. What are they going to get for Panarin? I mean, he holds all the leverage. How can you fleece two or three first-round picks when Panarin, you know, gets to pick his destination? Who has the cap space?
Yeah, I don't know. I just hope he doesn't end up in Florida. I think he wants to play down there.
He might. You know...
How about Chicago? Go back to Chicago.
Chicago's a possibility. I think, you know, Carolina keeps hitting and missing. I think they're going to take a big swing.
I can see that too.
And the other one, frankly, is LA has kind of fallen back off.
That's a good one too. They need some offense.
Yeah. You know, if he wants to go to the warm weather, LA may be a possibility.
I think Carolina's a really good pick. Yeah. It just didn't work out with them. They took the swing for Rantanen last year.
Right. But then they were smart and moved on. Now, Panarin's older, but. Look, Carolina's window is starting to close a little bit. I mean, they're not super young anymore. I think they need an Artemi Panarin. I really do.
Well, how about outdoor games? We had one in Happy Valley. We had the Stadium Series in Florida. Your thoughts on those games? Exciting?
To be completely transparent, I was very busy Saturday. I had a charity event I had to do. I saw one period of the outdoor Penn State game. Good crowd. I'm happy for them. Way too cold. Glad I didn't go. My son was there all bundled up.
Yep. I could have gone for free. I declined.
Oh, me too. But, you know, good experience, and I'm happy for them. That game in Tampa was the best outdoor game there's ever been.
Wow.
It had everything. I mean, and look, I am not the fighting guy, all right? I want to say that up front. I don't like fighting. I wish it'd go out. Having said that, the goalie fight was pretty cool. I can't deny that. You know, Boston gets out to a 5-1 lead and then proceeds to just penalty box their way right out of the game. You've got a great overtime. You've got a good shootout. And then at the very end, Pastrnak hits the bar. You know, he could have tied it. Plus the cool thing about the uniforms and the way they came in, and I'm not even sure what John Cooper was going for, but it was cool. It was a cool look. It might have been Scarface. I couldn't tell for sure.
And the fastest goal in outdoor game history, 11 seconds in.
I mean, if every outdoor game was like that, I mean, and everybody's like, oh, the 08 game was, you know, look. It was cool because it was the first game, but it wasn't that good.
The quality wasn't very good.
This was a fast. I mean, I wasn't even going to watch. Like, I was just flipping. Like, oh yeah, the outdoor game, and I couldn't turn it off.
Yeah, and I think it was about 42 degrees at puck drop.
They got lucky with the weather. You know what? That worked out. Good for them.
Yep. Any topics you wanted to hit before we call it a day? I might have one or two more if you don't.
Well, you lead off.
All right. Well, how about the Pirates here? I see Suarez.
Oh, we're going to talk about this again.
Well, Suarez went to the Reds. Apparently, the Pirates had the same bid
on
him.
I told you before, and you know they're going to keep saying, oh, we bid this and we bid that. Sign somebody or shut up. I don't care about coming in second on these contracts.
Where do they go from here now at third base? I hope it's not Triola.
No, well, no, I frankly, I think they really ought to, if Griffin's ready, they probably won't start at the year with Griffin, but they probably ought to plan on him being ready by May or June at the latest, and they can move people around. They're probably not going to take a big swing, and there aren't that many big swings left to take, but this is the year where if you're in contention midseason, you make that deal for somebody.
Yeah. All right, well, it is actually time to get lost, so let's do it.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to say hashtag get lost to having the Winter Classic on New Year's, because what they did the other night, there was the week between the championship games and the Super Bowl is the perfect week for that game.
Nice.
They should just do the Winter Classic then.
All right. I like it. Not getting lost. You want to see it come back.
Well, get lost too.
Yeah.
In New Year's Day. Thing.
I got you. All right. Well, I'm going to say hashtag get lost to Phil Kessel not showing up for the 2016 reunion.
Yeah, what was up with
that? Well, he probably wasn't getting paid and there were no hot dogs for him.
You know, Sid, I mean, Phil was a big part of it, but sometimes you do wonder about that guy.
Yep. Well, he has his reputation for a reason. That'll do it for this week. We want to wish you a happy Super Bowl and hope everybody enjoys the big game. Under Review can be found on Spotify. Follow us and leave a review. For Dave, I'm Bob. We'll catch you next week right here on Connect FM.